Morning, family. Good to see all of you this morning. Good to see our visitors also. If you'd be willing to fill out one of the cards on the back of the pew in front of you so we have a record of your attendance, we'd appreciate that. We're going to find ourselves this morning in Acts chapter 10. I think I told you guys last week the wrong chapter. I apologize for that. Next week, Lord willing, we'll be in Acts chapter 11. And I triple-checked that to make sure I wasn't giving you guys false information this morning. In the early 1900s, there were dozens of intelligence tests that were developed across Europe and in the United States. And here's the deal. They all claimed that they could offer an unbiased way to measure a person's cognitive ability. All right? And so in 1905, the Binet-Simon scale became the base model for modern IQ testing. It's used by, during that time, it was actually used by eugenicists as a tool to prohibit racial mixing. But here's an example question. Let's see how many of us can get this one. Randall should be the first one, actually, to get it right. This isn't working up here, Galen. John, 12 years old, is three times older than his brother. How old will John be when he is twice the age of his brother? Raise your hand when you have the answer. Well, Mitch already had the answer because he's cheating. Natasha, you're cheating too. We talked about this already. Raise your hand when you guys get the answer. I can see the looks on some of your faces. You're like, I'm not even trying it, so don't even worry about it. All right, Dan got it. Caden got it. Caden, what's the answer? Dan, what's the answer? 16. How many of us got 16? You know how long it took me to get 16? I counted it out on my fingers. And there's an equation that you can use to get the answer, but the answer is 16. Now, here's an interesting fact. Alfred Binet, the guy that came up with this whole idea, thought that an IQ test was an inadequate measure for intelligence. He said the reason it's inadequate is because it does not measure creativity or emotional intelligence. And what's interesting about it is how many of us have heard of the IQ test? Do you know police departments use the IQ test? You can't have too high of an IQ to serve on some police departments because they think you get bored, and a bored police officer is never a good thing. It raises a lot of questions to me, though, as you start thinking about it. Like, for instance, what is intelligence? If we can figure out actually what intelligence is intelligence universal? For instance, let's do this, quick quiz. Raise your hand if you think you're intelligent. Come on, this isn't a time for modesty. If you think you're smart, put your hand up, guys. I think I'm smart, and I'm not too proud to admit it, right? We all think that we're intelligent, whether we want to admit it or not. We're just like, I'm going to be a little humble here and tell you that I'm not smart, right? So if you don't think you're intelligent, you think you're unintelligent. How many of us think we're unintelligent? That's what I thought. Right? Okay, so if we're so smart, what's this? Caroline, what do you think that is? Oh, a dog toy? That's pretty close. Next picture will help us have a little bit more of a clue. What is it, guys? Brandon, what is that? Where is Brandon? He left. He knew I was going to ask him. Justice, what is that? A knapsack? Next picture. It is a knapsack. Literally. Yeah. Even though I doubt that that was the nap that Justice was referring to in all of that, right? My point in this is very simple, guys. There are always going to be things, something that we are uneducated about. That doesn't mean we're unintelligent. It just means we need education. That's all that it means. And I think that's what is kind of being referred to when we start off actually this morning in 1 John chapter 4 and verse 1. Right? Because I think that we're way smarter than we give ourselves credit. I think that by and large, the majority of people are far more intelligent than they let on. And I think a lot of that is because Satan works very hard in trying to fool us into thinking that we're just not smart enough for certain things. And the big one is that we're not smart enough to figure out what God thinks. I think that's one of the biggest lies that we as Christians buy into from Satan, is that we're unintelligent enough to have to figure out what God thinks. And that's why, to take a phrase from Alan's class this morning, we ended up with lots of people wearing crazy clothes telling us what to think. And we swallowed it, hook, line, and sinker, thinking that they were the only way that we could gain enlightenment and gain understanding of what God thinks or what his view is of things in the world. And so we let other people do the thinking for us instead of doing it ourselves. And you look at 1 John chapter 4. If you're not there, go ahead and turn over there again. But John's writing, he says, "Beloved, do not believe every spirit, but test the spirits to see whether they are from God, because many false prophets have gone out into the world." You know what John is essentially saying here? He's basically saying, don't believe everything you hear. And I think that when he says, don't believe everything you hear, that would include any source. That could be yourself. That could be someone else. It doesn't matter. You don't believe everything that you hear. In fact, the minute that you hear something, you check it out. For instance, if I came up here this morning and said, Jesus did not come in the flesh, would you believe me? Would you take it as gospel truth because I'm wearing the proper clothing and I'm in the proper position, and then just carry on and take that with you as a message that you're going to live your life by? When John continues there and he says, lots of false prophets have come on out of the world. By this, you know the Spirit of God. What's the by this? The test. That's how you're going to know whether something is from the Spirit of God. Every spirit that confesses Jesus Christ has come in the flesh is from God. Okay, I gave you an easy one to begin with. And every spirit that does not confess Jesus is not from God. This is the spirit of the Antichrist, of which you have heard that it is coming, and now it is already in the world. You are from God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. They are from the world, therefore they speak as from the world, and the world listens to them. We're from God. He who knows God listens to us. He who is not from God does not listen to us. By this, the test, we know the spirit of truth and the spirit of error. It's by the testing that we're able to do it. So we hear something. Maybe we've never heard it before. Maybe we have heard it before. We still aren't supposed to believe it the minute that we hear it until we have investigated to find out whether or not it is truth or error. This is one of the reasons why everybody looks to the Bereans as being more noble-minded than anybody else, right? Because they took the things that they heard and they what? Investigated to determine whether or not it was true. And then once they determined that it was true, then they believed it and they moved forward on that belief. And that's all John is saying here. And some subjects are going to be easier than others, but that doesn't matter, because we are all intelligent enough, God thinks this, that we are all intelligent enough to apply ourselves to figure out what is truth and what is error. Crazy, right? To think that God thinks that we're smart. And that's why we get into Acts chapter 10. Let's turn over there. We're going to see this actually play out here, this whole concept. Because I'm convinced that as of Acts chapter 10, there is probably no way that Peter would have gone to the Gentiles with the gospel. Not without some prodding first. He's going to need a little bit of motivation to get out there to them. But he's not going to go. And in Acts chapter 10, we're going to start in verse 9. Cornelius has had a vision, and he has sent men to Joppa to find Peter. And in verse 9 it says, on the next day as they were on their way, that's the men that Cornelius had sent, and approaching the city, Peter went up on the housetop about the sixth hour to pray. But he became hungry and was desiring to eat. But while they were making preparations, he fell into a trance. And he saw the sky opened up and an object like a great sheet coming down, lowered by four corners to the ground. And there were in it all kinds of four-footed animals and crawling creatures of the earth and birds of the air. A voice came to him, "Get up, Peter, kill and eat." But Peter said, "By no means, Lord, for I have never eaten anything unholy and unclean." Again, a voice came to him a second time, "What God has cleansed, no longer consider unholy." This happened three times, and immediately the object was taken up into the sky. Now, while Peter was greatly perplexed in mind as to what the vision which he had seen might be, behold, the men who had been sent by Cornelius, having asked directions for Simon's house, appeared at the gate. And calling out, they were asking whether Simon, who was also called Peter, was staying there. While Peter was reflecting on the vision, the Spirit said to him, "Behold, three men are looking for you, but get up, go downstairs, and accompany them without misgivings, for I have sent them myself." Peter went down to the men and said, "Behold, I am the one you're looking for. What is the reason for which you have come?" They said, "Cornelius, a centurion, a righteous and God-fearing man, well spoken of by the entire nation of the Jews, was divinely directed by a holy angel to send for you to come to his house and hear a message from you." So he invited them in and gave them lodging. And we're going to stop there for right now. First things first, we got to get this out of the way before we even get into what this whole story is about, is that this vision is not about food. At all. It's allegory. Right, Alan? It's not about food. We know this. But guess who doesn't? Peter. Peter doesn't know this. Now I want you to imagine for a second. Peter, up on the roof, a little bit hungry, got the food getting prepared below, right? And we all know how that is when you're sitting there waiting for supper to get done and all those smells are coming out of the kitchen. It just makes you even more hungry. Your stomach starts to get a little bit of a knot. And then all of a sudden you get this vision. And here's Peter, who, by the way, had lived his life, apparently according to the kosher law of Jewish dietary restrictions, never eaten anything that was unclean or unholy, because that was prescribed in the law to the Jewish people. And Peter, by his own admission, has said that he has never engaged in anything like that. And now all of a sudden he gets a vision that says, eat. So, he's hearing something that is completely opposite of what he has heard and lived his entire life. Now you're Peter. Are you confused? Are you greatly perplexed in mind as to what this vision might be? And how much effort are you going to put into figuring out whether or not this vision you have received is the truth or not? And while he's trying to determine the truth of the message, he's told by the Spirit to go with the men who are looking for him, right? And I think if we look at the big picture of the whole story, this is around the time that he figures out that it isn't about food. I don't think he's figured out what it's all about yet, but he's at least figured out that it's not about food. When you look at verse 28, when he's talking to Cornelius, he says, "You know how unlawful it is for a man who is a Jew to associate with a foreigner or visit with him." We're not going to get into that. He said, "Yet God has shown me that I should not call any man unholy or unclean." This God has shown me is the visions that he's received on the roof. Okay, so he's at least figured out that it's not about food. He hasn't quite even figured out that it's not about what he thought it was about until we get into verse 34. He says, "I most certainly understand now that God is not one to show partiality," after he has heard about Cornelius' vision and how he's supposed to be delivering a message. So while we look at Peter as probably one of the most unintelligent disciples of all the 12 that were in there, he's really not. He's smart enough to get this thing figured out. He just takes a little bit more time to work through all of it. Okay? And this is what we're looking at when we talk about 1 John chapter 4 and verse 1. Peter is going to be able to accept what is going on. And when you look at chapter 11 and verse 17, he says, "Therefore, if God gave to them the same gift as he gave to us also after believing in the Lord Jesus Christ, who was I that I could stand in God's way?" So Peter, notice what is happening here in this entire story. And it takes a lot of time for Peter to figure it out. But what he applies first and foremost is a little bit of logic and common sense. I have heard something that goes completely against what I have heard my entire life. And for us, it could be just something I have heard something that's different than what I have heard my entire life. So I need to test this thing out. I need to figure out if it's actually true or if it is error. If it's error, I'm going to utterly reject it and not give it a second thought. But if it is truth, then I am going to embrace it and I'm going to move forward with it like there is nothing else in the world. And his statement when he says, "Who am I to stand in God's way?" shows us that he has now accepted the truth of the vision that he received on the roof, and he is going to make that a part of his life. It's who he is going to be, but he's only going to get to that point after he's been educated and uses his intelligence to make application. Okay? Now, granted, the education he receives is direct visit and line from the Spirit telling him certain things as he goes on, but the Spirit does not feed him every bit of information that he needs as he moves forward. The Spirit puts Peter in a very specific situation and allows Peter to use some common sense in what he knows about God. And if anything he was going to be doing would go against God, then that would be a spirit of error. How many times do we feel inadequate whenever certain subjects come up? We're just not educated enough in it. We don't know what we're supposed to think or how we're supposed to think on any given subject. But how many of us are willing to move forward the feeling of inadequacy and actually move into the realm of education? To put forth the effort to test something out that we hear. Here's a simple one, and we've used it before. I say to you that 2 + 2 = 5. And you've heard it before, and you've probably even seen the mathematical equations that prove that 2 + 2 = 5. And I spend the next 3 hours passionately speaking about the truth of 2 + 2 = 5. And I bring up all sorts of examples and metaphysical stuff and blah, 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 blah. And you are wondering if I'm actually telling you the truth now because I've been so convincing in the way that I present that information. And you feel a little bit inadequate about it. So how do you go about testing that? This is how you test out 2 + 2 = 5, the truth or the error of it. Everybody hold up 2 fingers over here. And everybody hold up 2 fingers over here. Now put them together. 5. We've got to be able to make the application of it. But we've got to get educated on certain things. I don't think Peter is being stubborn when he's seeing this vision. But I think of Peter as hearing something that goes against what he's heard his entire life, and he just needs to make sure. And like Peter, there are going to be times of testing for us. Whether we hear it from ourselves, from the elders, from Jeremy, from the deacons, from a member sitting in the pew. In fact, you should be testing everything I say every time I'm up here. There's going to be those moments where we have to humbly and diligently test things out against God's standard. When it meets the standard, we embrace it. We run with it. But when it goes against the standard, we utterly reject it. And we don't accept or reject anything based on anyone else's view, but on God's view. And sometimes, it will take those moments where we're going to have to diligently apply ourselves to the Word to actually figure out what God's view is on something. Using common sense to make the application. But that falls to us individually. And here's the wonderful thing about this whole testing thing, guys, is that I'm convinced that the whole testing of the spirits, verifying something, if it's a spirit of truth or spirit of error, doesn't only mean churchy stuff. That this is meant to be applied as a principle through all aspects of our lives. That we are investigating, that we're actually defining what the truth is as we're living this life. Because I think when we do that, it gives us something that the uneducated will never have. Confidence. Don't answer this by raising your hand or saying anything, but how confident are you in the truth of the gospel? And if you're not confident in the truth of the gospel, test it out. Put it to the test. Because God's not, I'm convinced God's not upset with us when we put these truths to the test. We're actually rewarded when we do those things. And we're going to talk a little bit tonight when we start off our series on the Minor Prophets about God actually calling for the people to test him in certain things. This isn't putting him to the test like children do at times when we tell them to get dressed 50 times in the morning. But simply verifying what he says is true. And when we understand and we can verify what truth is, we gain confidence in every aspect of our lives. Psalm 16 and verse 8 says, I've set the Lord continually before me. Because he's at my right hand, I will not be shaken, or I will be confident. That God's not wanting us to go through this period of testing and investigation just so that he can sit back and laugh at us when we're having a hard time figuring it out. He wants a confident people. He wants a people who are rooted in the truth. And so he wants us to do these things. And a word of caution, though, as we get toward the end here. Confidence is not arrogance. We've all met an arrogant person at one point in our lives. But understand that arrogance is about feeling smart as long as someone else feels stupid. That's arrogance. Arrogance depends on thinking less of someone else so that you can think better of yourself. And it comes out in your behaviors. That's arrogant. Confidence is all about being competent. And it comes from within. A confidence person will use their abilities to be of use to other people. Confident people make those around them better. Are we making people around us better for having known us? It's test time. Don't run away from it. Don't shy away from it. Test times promote growth. They promote education. They build confidence. Confidence only actually occurs through education. God is calling us to be a people who are willing to test anything and everything to find out if it is truth or error. And he expects us that when we find truth, to embrace it. And then when we identify error, we reject it. We don't give it a second thought, and we move forward standing on truth so that we can make people better who are around us. That's all Peter is doing, guys. Figuring out what the truth is so that others can be better. Let's be a people like that, who God calls us to be in this world, to live the life that he's called us to be, confident, not arrogant, confident in the truth. So that when we are asked about it, when period of time of education come up, when we have an opportunity to educate someone, we can speak with confidence what truth is. And here's the basic truth of life. You ready? You can test me out on it later. God is love. And that God loved the world so much that he would send his only son to die for the sins of the individuals on this earth. And that in believing in that, man would not perish, but live. That is the ultimate truth of the universe. And when we accept it as truth, we live it. That love is then directed into us from God, and it is lived in a very real way to those that we come into contact with. But we won't be able to live that way until we acknowledge and accept the truth that God is love. And we're going to stand and sing the song that Dan has selected for us this morning. Let this be a time of encouragement for us. You find yourself struggling with something that you've heard, that you don't recognize, you're having a difficult time recognizing it as truth or error. This is an opportunity for us to help each other in that way, to be educated, to join in the education process together. Perhaps you're with us this morning and you have acknowledged finally in your life that Jesus is the Christ, He's the Son of God, and that He came so that you could be saved and redeemed. Make the confession of make that confession before us this morning and be baptized for the forgiveness of your sin. Whatever we can do for you, we encourage you, come while we stand and sing.